Taking off the uniform doesn't mean everything else disappears. The old habits stick, the memories that you have stay with you, and sometimes you're left wondering what it all meant. Some nights feel too quiet, and the structure you once had is nowhere to be found. And you think back to the guys that you served with, the mission that you had, the sense that every day meant something. In this episode, I'm sitting down with Marine veteran Sean Abruzzi and Warrior Strong founder Tom Tice. These are two guys who understand what this feels like. Their work is there to help veterans, give them space, and allow them to keep serving in ways that make sense for who they are now. Through fitness, shared experience, and honest conversations, Warrior Strong is helping veterans rediscover a mission that matters. In this episode, they're going to talk about what it means to lose your identity after your service, how purpose can shift but never really vanish, and why openness with your community, your family, and even yourself can change everything. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will serve as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you want to learn more or find out how you can support the mission, visit gwattmemorialfoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Sean, Brittany, and Tom, welcome to the show. Really glad to have all three of you here. We're going to be talking about Warrior Strong. We're going to be talking about coffee. We're going to be doing a lot of jumping around a lot of different topics here, but I think it's going to be a great episode. But just wanted to welcome you all to the show.
Dude, I mean, thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get started, could you tell us a little bit about your backgrounds, a little bit about yourself, and kind of, you know, we'll take it from there after that.
Sure. Yeah, dude.
So, you grew up over here in Roxbury, New Jersey, alongside of Tom Tice, a little bit older than him. He's a little bit younger than me. It's all right, though. From there, I went to college for 2 years. After that point, spring break, sophomore year of college, I decided to join the Marine Corps. Always wanted to be a Marine from the time I was a young lad, if you will. Always wanted to be a Marine. Lucky enough, my parents sat me down and they were like, hey, dude, can you promise us you're going to give us 2 years of college first? Like, do 2 years of college first. After those 2 year mark, we'll give you a blessing. Then you join the Marine Corps. At the time, I kind of fought with them back and forth. And I was like, you know what, man? Like, roger that. I'll give them the 2 years of college. I think in their head, they thought that, A, the war was going to be over. You know, this is 07. So they figured 2 years, 09, war's going to be over, you know. B, like, maybe they thought I was going to fall in love in college or something like that. Or my mind would have went somewhere else, right? So, didn't. Spring break, sophomore year of college, I came home. I was like, hey, guys, I did my 2 years. Like, it's time. Like, I'm ready to join the Marine Corps. You know, like, all my friends from high school, they've already done their combat pump. But it's time for me to get mine. So, my dad and my mom, like, okay, got our blessing. So, me and my father went into the recruiting office. Unbeknownst to me until years later, while I was in that recruiting office, my dad actually had to step out. He was throwing up outside. Yeah, he was like, him and my mom were that nervous, and rightfully so. Like, I was a kid joining the military during a time of war.
Yeah.
So I did that, signed up, 09, went to Paris Island. From there, Camp Geiger. From there, I joined, they put me in America's Battalion, right? 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines. 2011, we went to Sangam Valley, Afghanistan. And then in 2013, I went to, right outside Garbager, that Camp Dwyer. We shut that Camp Dwyer. Two complete polar opposite deployments on that spectrum, like complete opposite deployments. Now, you were in the Marine as well?
No, I was in the Army.
You were in the Army? Okay.
Yeah.
What kinds were you in?
I deployed to Afghanistan in 2010. Yeah. And so I joined just a little bit before you. I went through basic training 2005, 2006, like around that time period.
Okay.
And when we were going through, I was kind of laughing as you were saying, yeah, the war will be over by then. When we were going through basic training, we were being told it's not a matter of if, but when you get deployed.
Right.
Like that at that time point, time period, everybody was getting deployed. We were infantry, so that it was kind of like a, you know, no brainer. That's you're getting out there. You're gonna be deployed. So, and it's funny just how a few years like that mindset starts to kind of shift a little bit.
And, right. So in 2009 was summer decision, right? That's where Obama's war kind of kicked off. Obama's war kind of kicked off was the 2009 summer decision where we're going to do the troop surge in Afghanistan. Right? For me at that point in time, my seniors who are younger than me, 21, I'm buying these dude beers, they already did their full-blown combat pump where they are not only squad size element, they're company size element versus company size element getting after like full-blown firing lines. Going down in Garbager, and I was like, did I miss the war? Did I not miss the war? Like, when are we going? When are we not going? And then I remember training for Sangin Valor. At that time, we were training for Marja, and we were 29 palms, and there was rumors of it was 3-5 getting wrecked in Sangin. When 3-5 started getting wrecked, those rumors started coming around, like, yo, 3-5 is in combat replacements. How big is the combat replacements going to be? And there might be a company size element. And then sure shit, we got tapped like, hey, company size element, you guys are going to Sangin Valley. 3-5 needs a replacement of a company size element there. And we're like, wow, it's like that then. You know?
It's that bad, right?
Yeah, right. It's like that. And I've heard the statistics before, and don't quote me on where the statistics came from, but it was one out of every four people we came across was no shit Taliban and or affiliated with the Taliban. All of our patrols, we would say we'd find 2 to 3 IEDs per patrol. That was just the environment that we're in. Mm-hmm. And it was the complete polar opposite of that 09 pump that my seniors did. And they were gunslinging the entire time. Like they were full-blown firefight gunslinging the entire time. My deployment was more so negotiating IEDs, negotiating thresholds. Every corner had an IED. Every threshold of the door had an IED. So we're blasting our way through the walls of the compounds instead of making an entry through the doorway because there's always a pressure wave there. Two completely polar opposite deployments. And I think there's something you said about Afghanistan and Iraq that a lot of people don't understand. Like, oh, you want to go play in a sandbox. I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? Right? Like it's different deployments. So where you went and where I went, two completely different spectrums. And the time frame that you're there, two completely different spectrums as it stands too, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly, because I think that the people who haven't been over there and maybe haven't done multiple deployments, I haven't done multiple, but I've talked to plenty of people at different stages of the war that I know the different deployments were not all the same. They're not all created equally, depending on when you were there, all that. Really,
but
matters,
dude, outside you know? Looking in, like that's something that like everybody thinks, oh, he's going to the sandbox, because they relate to that one person that they know that went to that one deployment that they did, and that one deployment is what people foresee all of war to be.
Because
you don't know what you don't know when you relate to that one person that's saying what that is, right?
Right.
Yeah. So from there, when it came time for my second deployment, I actually had extended my contract an extra 4 months for my second deployment. That one. Relatively nothing happened on my second deployment. There was a few things that happened, but nothing as drastic as my first deployment for them. Yep. Got out, got lucky enough to get into law enforcement relatively quick. Took the civil service, got picked up relatively quick, jumped into the narcotics world relatively quick, patrol world relatively quick, and started going down that route. And I think that's probably right along the same time that I started meeting Tom. I would say circa 2015, 2016, you say, right, Tom?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So for me, at that point, 2015, I started coming across my transitional issues at that point, where I was like, probably more or less looking for that sense of purpose, I think I would say. Like, I think I, like, my whole life was circled around joining the Marine Corps. From the time I was a little kid, like, dude, I want to gunsling. I want to be a little kid. Like, I want to gunsling. I want to play dress up, I'm hiding in the woods, like that's it, dude. Like that, and that was all I ever trained to do in my head, even though it's not training, but like I was, you know, like I want to be a gunslinger in the ring. So from there, when I got out, I was like, did I make the right decision by getting out? Hmm. Right? Is that my move by getting out? Still to this day, I go back and forth. Like, was that the right decision? And I don't, for me, at that time, it became a downsizing issue, right? The Marine Corps was downsizing. I had tattoos. I couldn't even reenlist in the reserves. I could reenlist if I stayed in infantry, but I decided that I wanted to get out and have a family. So that was my move. Got out, had my transitional issues, where I think it was purpose-driven because that's all I wanted to do was be a Marine. So then friend posted on Facebook, hey, and here's an organization called Wine to Water. And I'm probably long-winded my side of the story. So let me take a break back and let her jump in and kind of tell her side of the story a little bit.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
I am not a veteran. I do have a lot of military in the family. I do crisis management and risk mitigation for corporate. But we just met Memorial Day last weekend, and I'm in. Locked in, full support, head first into everything.
Excellent.
She's also been circled in the nonprofit world.
So yeah,
she was working with an organization called Beyond Badge. I was helping out law enforcement suicides.
Yeah, families that have lost their fathers, husbands to suicide.
Yeah, that's obviously not a cause that anyone wants to have happen, to take place. But it's great that there's organizations out there like that to look after the families and the folks who need that type of support after those tragic situations.
And,
you know,
and I'm gonna bring that back from what she did to where we are today.
Okay.
I like to surround myself by people who are part of these nonprofits, like people like Tom, or people like Brady, or other people who see a need and go forth and they conquer that need, they conquer that purpose. And it's they do it because it's what in their heart, what needs to be done. And that's why you see people like Brady here in my life. You see people like Tom there in my life. You know, now you're in my life, dude. Congratulations. rock and roll, right, dude? But I think purpose is everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the bare bones of that purpose, I could probably go on a tangent with. But so the gist of it, and then I started making a coffee company, and I decided to take that coffee company, and I realized that, hey, man, communities always surround around a coffee, so why not circle our nonprofit communities around the center of coffee and have a conversation like this? And that's kind of where we're now tying into Warrior Strong and what Tom does with all of it. Does that make sense, Tom, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, Sean's been doing – that's how I met Sean, through Wine to Water. I went to high school with his sister, and Sean was doing something locally at the time, I think raising money for Wine to Water before I even started Warrior Strong. His sister, Angie, forwarded me the fundraiser. I shared it on my Facebook. Went out there, was able to support it, and just learned about what Sean was doing and kind of learning about, the reason behind why he was doing it was to give back, to serve, and be part of something bigger than himself. And at the time, like I said, I wasn't even doing Warrior Strong yet, but I realized, there's a need for other organizations out there to help on another level, on another scale. So it's been amazing to work with Sean. He's doing this coffee business, which I'm excited for us to kind of go deeper in and what he's actually doing with it besides just selling coffee, because he's doing a lot more than just that.
I'll push that, bud.
Yeah, right. And that was going to be one of my questions, because I know when Tom and I were talking, he was telling me a little bit about you. And we got to the point where I was like, okay, there's got to be some more to it. It's not just coffee. It's not just selling coffee. You're not just a one-stop shop where it's just coffee. There's something else special about what you guys do. So tell us a little bit about the coffee company and, kind of how it ties in with Warrior Strong and what you guys are all doing together.
Yeah, rock and roll. So I started this coffee company about a year and a half ago, right? I roast all my own stuff, start to finish. We have a direct trade connection with Colombia, where we're very fortunate to have that. So I can literally call the guys on WhatsApp, tell them see what they have available, and they send it up here, then I roast everything. But more importantly, for me and the coffee company as a whole is, I'm going to go back to that nonprofit where we were talking about before. Like I love what Brittany was part of. I love what Tom's a part of. I love what these other organizations are part of. And I truly do believe that coffee is always surrounded by community. So if I could work a successful nonprofit and get paid for it, I would love that, But what I saw was, I was like, you know what? when I was working with Wine to Water, which I'll probably take it back a second and talk about Wine to Water and as far as what I was doing with those guys a little bit, and that would probably help explain where I'm going with it.
Sure.
So what Wine to Water is they give the gift of clean water to countries that don't have the gift of clean water. That means is they drill wells for water, they set up water filtration devices. I've been through all throughout the Amazon, Ethiopia, both of us have been in Nepal. I've sent veterans, I paid for veterans full flight, food, water, stay, everything to go to these different locations, Cambodia for that matter, to help regain a sense of purpose while giving a gift of clean water. And that goes back to the veteran suicide ratio. In my eyes, I truly do believe that a lot of veterans have committed suicide due to lack of purpose, right? A lot of people throw the words PTSD out there, but what I really like, and it's from the gala I saw yesterday, Warrior Strong's gala, was, yes, PTSD is one of the leading factors that veterans have a transition problem with. But there's also depression. There's also loneliness, right? And those two factors easily get lumped right in there with PTSD. Now, is PTSD a killer? Absolutely. Do I know that survivor's guilt is a real thing? Absolutely. But I think purpose, above everything else, is what can and will combat the veteran suicide ratio. And that's something I truly do believe. Because I know I've lost 19 is low 20 worth of friends to suicide, and I know what a lot of them saw and didn't see. But I also know that having a conversation with the loved ones after the fact that they kill themselves, they say, oh, it's PTSD, yeah, it's PTSD. And I'm like, maybe, yeah. Or was it depression? Or was it loneliness? Or was it the fact that you didn't have a sense of purpose?
Yeah.
So what I saw with Wine to Water banner chapter, which is where we started, was to give these guys a sense of purpose, right? But when I was running that, I had a fantastic time fundraising, pulling money in left and right. And Tom, you could probably attest to, earmarking money is a real thing. Like, if that money doesn't get spent, it becomes an issue, right?
Right, yeah.
I was having a difficult time physically getting veterans on these trips. Mm-hmm. Like, the mindset's great, right? But then once a veteran say, I want to go on this trip, now there's a stigma associated with that because I fundraised with that stigma. And that was a learning curve for me. So when I realized I was having that learning curve, I was like, you know what, they're worrying me. So I had to readjust, right? I didn't have any guidelines or anybody really helping me trying to readjust this nonprofit because there's not something that's exactly like that, right? It's its own program.
Sure.
So when I decided to start this coffee company, I was like, coffee surrounded by community. Let's get involved in the nonprofit community because all these nonprofits run parallel and one nonprofit might know more about how to succeed than this other nonprofit. Or there might be a issue with, and don't quote me on this, but there might be an issue with Warrior Strong in the fundraising portion of it versus, we'll say Operation Pay It Forward has a great time getting people on their trips, but they have a hard time fundraising. All right, so if coffee's surrounded by community, we can sit here and have this conversation, and these nonprofits work parallel with each other, then let's get them talking. Let's get them feeding off each other, and let's get them building an empire. Let's get them building all these different teams and sending guys that, hey, maybe Warrior Strong has an individual that needs some adaptive physical fitness training. Cool, I know a person. Hey, Tom Tice, bro, do you mind teaching this guy who doesn't have any legs how to train himself? Roger, check, right?
Yeah.
Tom says, hey, man, I got a guy who loves connecting in the outdoors. Or I got a guy who loves connecting outdoors. Do you have something to do that? Yeah, dude. Operation Pay It Forward, they send guys on deep sea fishing, hunting, hiking, and they surround each other by like-minded individuals who want to get outside. So I saw these voids in these different nonprofits, or I'm sorry, I didn't see these voids. I just know that there are voids in nonprofits that can react to each other, that can build off each other. So that's what I'm trying to do right now with the coffee industry and the coffee company as a whole. Is try to get these dudes talking. And I, every other month, sorry, I'm probably going to rant right now, but every other month I work with a different nonprofit where I take that nonprofit, I take that name, their logo, I throw on the front of it, and now I'm throwing their mission statement. So now in somebody's house, they have a mission statement and their logo in somebody's house, and they can build off that. They can see what this is about. Hey, is this somebody I want to donate to, or is this something that somebody else could?
Right.
You know, oh, that's a good idea. I know so-and-so who runs a nonprofit. He would love this. That's what I want. I want to help build their followers and build their mission statement to ultimately succeed.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something that you were just talking about how the, you know, one organization might have somebody who wants to do stuff with outdoors. Someone else might have someone who needs adaptive fitness. Someone else might have someone who wants to, I don't know, do golf or, you know, something like that for their, you know, whatever their issues are that they're dealing with, and they're just looking for that type of support. But if they're already, you know, kind of tied in with one organization and that organization doesn't do the thing that they're looking for, sometimes it just kind of feels like they're just on their own and floating around there and not really getting the support that they need. And to your point, wouldn't it be great if we can bring these organizations together and say, hey, you do this, I got a guy who needs this, let's send him over your way. And you know, hey, no skin off my back, that guy needs help with whatever, let him go over there. And that's, to me, the way I look at it is, like, so long as that person gets the help that they're looking for, it's a win-win for everybody.
100%.
Right.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Like, if the ultimate goal is to help a veteran, right? Or help a law enforcement member or whatever, whatever your ultimate goal is, why can't you work here?
Yeah.
Why can't you have that conversation? Why can't you say, hey, man, I got a guy that might benefit from what you're doing, but it's not what I'm doing?
Yeah.
I'm more than willing to pass them off to you. You know, so like, and that's why I want to get these guys running parallel to see each other, because they might not see each other. And Tom, jump on this, man. Like, do you guys go to like conferences or something like that where you guys interact? I'm sure you've come across other nonprofits.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We come across many different nonprofits. Warrior Strong, I think, does a great job collaborating with other nonprofits. But the most important part, I think the most important part of this is, and Sean, Scott, you guys are veterans. Veterans in the nonprofit sector are always going to be weary of the organization that they're going to be working with, because a lot of veterans, oh, Warrior Strong, I don't know anyone about it. I don't know anyone who used it. I don't know anyone who's about it, right? So that's a challenge in its own. And this is where it's so important that Sean, you're touching on, is giving that veteran introduction to another organization. Like, we work with the Fisher House Foundation, PVA, Veteran Spouse Network, Military Spouse Fest. And when we say, hey, you know, we work with these organizations, you should look into them, they have opportunities for you, well, that validates now, okay, these, I trust Warrior Strong, I trust Tom, I trust these organizations, and then they're more willing to participate and be part of those groups. Because, you know, I've been doing this for 8 years, and I've learned so much in the past 8 years, and Sean, you heard it say, you know, you heard me say it last night at the gala, veterans help veterans, and they trust each other. And if someone isn't going to be there and just say, hey, you know, this organization is good, they might not get to that point of actually participating within that organization. So to your point, yeah, that work, what you're doing at your Sean Russi Coffee is really important, just because you're breaking the barrier.
I appreciate that, bud. And there is something said about the trust aspect, right? Because we do know that there is a lot of, we'll say, fugazi nonprofits out there. There's a lot of, sure. You know, like, I'm from Jersey, bro. We're throwing food there. Get used to it.
I get you. Yep.
There is a lot of those nonprofits out there, and there's a lot of those nonprofits that aren't allocated the money the best way it can be. And I'll say again, like, I never had a hard time fundraising for money. I had a hard time getting the veterans on the trip.
Okay.
So that was mine. That was our nonprofit issue.
Yeah.
There is something. I hear my dog howling right now. There's something to be said about that, because there's other people out there that could have stepped in and could have helped me with that, but I didn't know all these other NGOs existed. For instance, I would love to travel back over to Africa and do more humanitarian work in Africa. I don't want to do it under the blanket of religion. I have a hard time finding something that's not like religion. But it's out there. I know it's out there. I just have a hard time finding it. So what I'm trying to do again is just run things all out there, put it out there. These are the options available through the social media accounts. I could probably put it all on like a website and kind of list down everything on a website, list down all those different NGOs. And I will vouch, if I'm selling coffee on behalf of this NGO, I'll vouch it. That means I've already had a conversation with someone. I've said, yeah, this guy's legit.
Right.
And I'll vouch it.
And I think that's the important piece right there is that we'll, a lot of times in the veteran world, we will take another veteran's opinion on something, we'll hold that pretty highly, and we'll say, yeah, well, you know, if they're recommending this guy, you know, I'm going to trust him. I believe that he's not just selling me a load of crap. But if I go and check this organization out and they absolutely suck and they're right. screwing with me, or they're not delivering this, whatever it is, I'm going to look at you and I'm like, man, what a piece of crap. You know what? Like, why would you do that? And so I'm not going to trust you anymore. But the thing is, like, that's the more than just coffee piece of it that we were talking about before. This is kind of what you do is you're making those connections. You're finding the organizations that actually are legit. They're not the, you know, just here to steal people's money and not deliver services and yeah. that type of thing. So those types of organizations will never even get on your list of companies that you might recommend. You'll sniff those people out in no time, and they're not going to even make it. And if, God forbid, one of them does slip by, they're going to be off right away. And so, you know, that type of thing, I think, is what we're looking for. I think veterans in general, sometimes we don't know where to go, because the amount of, and you guys can probably attest to this, the amount of nonprofits and other programs through the VA and other organizations that are out there, there's just so many. It's like drinking from a fire hose when you're trying to collect this information.
100%, dude. 100%. You know?
And so if there's a place that you can go and be like, hey, this is what I'm looking for, can you point me in the right direction at least? You know, at least get me in touch with the people, and then I'll take it from there. You know, you don't need to be holding my hand the whole way. I don't know where to go. And so if you get those people that way, you know, I think it's just a hell of a lot better.
Yeah. And it's, sorry, good, Tom.
No, I just want to add to that too. There's two things that I think when you're getting someone into an organization as a user, right, is does it fit their needs and will they build a relationship? Two major things. When mm-hmm. you bring, well, especially, you know, Warrior Strong, it's okay, they're looking for yoga, meditation, great. They're looking for adaptive programs, great. But will they build relationships while they're here? And we say that to our new members, because it's great that they're participating using our service, but you have to build relationships, because you're going to need these relationships moving forward and having these conversations. So is it a good fit for the need, but is it a good fit to build relationships with people that they can trust? Because you need to put yourself around people that are going to lift you up and not lift you, you know, put you down.
100%. And I'll add on that too, because it's probably unpopular opinion too. Like, there are veterans out there that can be squirrely. Like, they can be squirrely, and they can use the PTSD Facebook status as their life. You know, yeah. like they use the once a Marine, always a Marine, as that is who they are for the rest of their life. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what I did. Instead of using that as a pillar, or they could use that as a fundraiser or a GoFundMe, et cetera. And the milk, the dollars of people in reality is, you probably don't need that. They're just kind of milking dollars. And, you know, like,
yeah.
It's very unfortunate, and I hate it. There was a period of time in my life where I was those dudes 911 called, right? Where I was getting those phone calls, where I was trying to combat veteran suicide, and I had to sit on that phone and I had to listen to their entire story, and I had to figure out if this guy is telling the truth, actually in a critical incident right now, about to have a critical incident. Do I need to call 911? Does he have to get hospitalized? Or is it just a cry for attention? For attention. Because he's a veteran and it's a cool thing to do. And that's extremely it's a very unpopular conversation to have out loud right now. But that's a real conversation I had to deal with all the time. And there was instances where I said, okay, I think this guy's good. I'm not going to call the police right now. I'm going to let this roll out. And then I sit there all night and I'm like not sleeping the whole entire night.
Had the right decision.
Yeah, did you do the right thing? Exactly.
And I just sit there and pray to God and answer my text message or phone call the next morning.
Yeah.
Or there was instances where I'm like, I got to call 911.
Sure.
And when you call 911, you put these guys in the hospital, like, there could be potential repercussions. Like, that guy's out of work now for 3-4 days. He's mm-hmm. in the hospital. But his life is safe. That's one of those battles to do the right thing, you know, and realize that he's not just drunk at a wedding being a combat veteran and or being a veteran, I should say, not a combat veteran, just being a veteran in general that drunk at a wedding saying, you don't know what it's like or what I went through.
Yeah. Right.
And filtering through them. It's horror.
Well, and just tying that back to something else that you were talking about earlier, I think at the beginning of the conversation, is that when you get out, sometimes you're searching for a sense of purpose or meaning or like whatever that uniform meant to you when you had it on. And then now you've left the military, you've taken that uniform off. Now, who are you? You need an identity that you can tie yourself around, and you start to feel broken because you don't know. I don't know who I am anymore. I can't figure that out. And so then you start hearing about the PTSD from other people. And it's like, well, geez, maybe that PTSD label is what I need to attach to myself. And, you know, maybe I'm not suicidal necessarily, but I'm still struggling to figure out who I am at this point. And
purpose.
Maybe my new label, my new identity that I'm tying to myself is a veteran in crisis. And so I'm calling to get help because that's what a veteran in crisis is going to do. I don't know if that's true or not. Just as you were talking, kind of that picture kind of got painted in my head that maybe that's one of the issues that some of these people are going through.
Yeah. So I have probably three schools of thought with that one person. I'm by no means a doctor. Everything I can say can be washed away, stripped away. Don't listen to me, you know. Again, I've lost a lot of friends to suicide, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then there's a couple of schools of thought where I could say, number one, Uncle Rico, right? Napoleon Dynamite. You're 1980s, you're on Pottsville, Pennsylvania. You're the quarterback of the high school team out there. Like, you are the bee's knees, dude. Like, you're going out there every Friday night. You're doing your thing. Every day during the week, you're rocking your jersey, you're going to the diner, everybody's buying your food, everybody's saying, hey, dude, can't wait to see you at the game. Like, you're the guy, right? You're getting all the girls. High school's over, what happens? You're working at a steam. Maybe you're okay with that, maybe you're not. If you're not okay with that and you peak when you're in high school, how do you recover from it?
Right.
I translate that just back to being in the military. If you're coming home and everybody's saying thank you for your service because they didn't do it with the Vietnam vets, which they should have, but now they're doing it to you now, and they should still, like, not as sure as they should, but, like, they are. You get accustomed to that, and you get accustomed to all these meals being bought from you. It's the same concept where you get out. Cool, dude. You're in the Marines. Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Well, what else? Like, now you have to be an adult, and you have ability. That was a pillar of your life. That is something that formed who you are, but it's not real. It's only a pillar. It's only a starting point. You got to build.
That's just one piece of the whole overall picture.
Only one piece, right? So now there's another thought process that goes on where, like, I see a huge difference of guys who went directly to college versus guys who went directly into the workforce right after they got out of the military. And I don't know what exactly the correlation is, but I do know that when you surround yourself by people say, oh, you must have saw some bad things. You must have done this. You must have done that. It starts weighing on your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that messed up? Because at the time, like, feeling a belt-fed machine gun vibrate through my shoulder is pretty cool. Like, I'm doing that stuff. Like, blowing some bombs up. Pretty cool. Throwing grenades. Pretty cool. You know, at the time, the boys like, dude, that was pretty cool, man. You know? But then when you surround yourself by people who say, that's not cool, then you start playing back in. Is that cool? Is that not cool? Shoot, I must be wrong. They're all thinking this way. I must be the wrong person. That's why I like to circle back to organizations like Warrior Strong or other veteran organizations, because you get surrounded by like-minded individuals who have done what you've done and realize, you know, that's just war. It's not really so much we saw or didn't see. It's just like, that's like, you could deploy and saw nothing, no combat the entire time. But when you surround yourself by people who have no idea anything what you did, they automatically assume the worst, that you have survivor's guilt, that you have this and you have that and depression. You're jumping on every single bang. Like, it's a hard thing to go across. You know, like, what is the right answer? I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't know that there is a right answer necessarily. It's just, you know, going back to what I was saying before, it's just kind of that picture that was getting painted in my head as you were talking. And you're right. Everybody has different experiences. One person could have deployed to Afghanistan or Iraq or any of these places and saw zero combat, even as a, you know, an infantry soldier, they could have saw absolutely no combat. They could have gotten, and I'll say it, they could have gotten lucky and saw no combat at all, you know.
But, or they could be upset because they saw no combat and they're dealing with that.
And that's where I was going with that, is that then they come back and felt like, well, I didn't really do my job, did I? Because I was trained to do infantry stuff. I was trained to do all those things that you were just talking about, the machine guns, the grenades, those things, clearing buildings, all that. Hey, but I didn't get to do it. So did I really do my job, or did I just walk around the desert for, you know, 9 months or a year or whatever and waste the taxpayers' dollars for absolutely nothing? And that mindset goes on in people's heads too. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's the right mindset to have. Absolutely not. I don't think that that's right. You went and did what your country asked you to do. And just because nobody decided to shoot at you, hey, you got lucky. You know, that's the way I see it.
Depending on what you want, right?
Well, I suppose, yeah. But I mean, having been in those types of situations, it's lucky. Trust me, yeah. Good. Yeah. You did what you're supposed to do, and you know, maybe you did it better than the rest of us, and that's why you didn't get shot.
Something said about that, right?
You know, there's something to be said for that.
Leaving a combat environment with your full squad intact. Congratulations, bro. Like you exceeded better than other squads.
Yeah,
or
right.
Companies. Like that, there's something to be said about it. Be proud of that. Right?
Big time. Yeah.
And that's where I think that who you surround yourself by, what you do after, and knowing that what you did is a pillar, not your identity, is what ultimately helps combat the Veterans Suicide Foundation.
Right.
In my opinion. Again, I'm not a doctor, but that's my opinion.
No, you're spot on, you know, and just working with the veterans every single day and their families is, you can't let your service define who you are. You can let it help you be successful in the future, because what you did in service, leadership skills, communication, community, camaraderie, can translate to the civilian world and use that as a skill, as an advantage to rise the ranks out here as a person, as a leader in your company, as a pillar in the community. That's how it translates.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what it's like to be obviously a veteran and someone to deal with the transitions that you have to deal with from service to civilian life. But the challenges are real. Their experiences are different, but the challenges are the same. And the fact that, you know, we keep talking about purpose, and I'm glad Sean brought up the conversations of suicide, but also the way of thinking after service. And it's funny, the chairman of the board, Rob, he's like, you know, back in the day, I was surrounding myself so much with people that talked about PTSD. He's like, oh my God, man, like, I have PTSD now.
PTSD know? From people talking about it?
Yeah.
Worst thing, like,
it's true. Like,
yeah.
And he even says it, like, he's in a better mental health space and a better mindfulness and mood generally because of the people he's around and the thing that he's doing positively for his life. And I know he's been through his own transition, and I'm not sharing his story, but what I'm saying is there's a reason behind the conversation that we're having right now about surrounding yourself with good people.
100%. Yeah. And that purpose.
Yeah. And I think, Tom, to your point, everything that we do in our lives, whether it's in the military or not, and this applies to service members, it applies to civilians, it doesn't matter who you are, anyone who's listening to this right now, everything that we've learned in our life, we have these new sets of skills, these new things that we have acquired just through maybe sometimes trial and error, maybe sometimes through school, maybe sometimes, you know, your dad taught you how to, you know, change the oil in the car or something, you know, whatever it is. It's a skill that you have that you, and it could be small things, it could be big things, whatever. You can make money doing it, or it could just be, it makes your life a little bit easier. And, you know, whatever it is, doesn't matter. But all of these things I equate it to kind of like a contractor who has, they carry around a tool belt And they also, like in the back of their truck, they got a toolbox where all the bigger tools or the tools that they don't use very often, that's where those tools kind of hang out. And a lot of stuff we learned in the military, a lot of stuff that you were talking about earlier, Sean, about, you know, shooting machine guns, throwing grenades, all those kind of things. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say you probably don't need to use any of those skills in your day-to-day life, making coffee and that type of thing, right? I mean, you might wish that you could from time to time, but you probably don't need to do those things too much, right? And so those are, but you still, if God forbid there was a situation that you needed to do that and you had the tools available, the grenades and machine guns and all that, you could still do it. I'm sure you could. Those things are sitting out in the truck right now, and you can leave those there. You don't need to be carrying that stuff around with you. You don't need to have the hypervigilance, the constantly, you know, facing towards the exits, not, you know, with your back up against a wall. Like, you don't have to constantly be hypervigilant, because guess what? Like, bad things like someone sneaking up behind you and popping you isn't going to happen on a day-to-day basis around here. You can put some of those things away. You don't need to have those until you need them. Then you can go out in the truck and you can go grab those tools and you can use those things when you need those things. But for the most part, take the skills that you use on a day-to-day basis, keep that on the tool belt, and you can walk around with those. And things like Tom was saying, the leadership skills, the, you know, those types of things, those are things that you can use on a daily basis. Take those, yeah, absolutely carry those things with you and use those in your next career or just whatever it is that you find yourself doing in life. And I think that's just a good way to look at it, because you have to sometimes like mentally offload some of that stuff. And for me, I like these visual analogies. And so if I can offload stuff, just leave it out in the truck, then that's where I'm going to leave it. And sometimes I might not even go out to the truck, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and there's something we said about, like, exactly what you're saying, like, put it away in the truck. Like, you don't need that today. Maybe put it away in the truck. You know it's there if in case you need it. Like, anytime you need it, you go grab it, right?
Yeah,
right. There's things that, like, maybe you should keep always on your tool belt to grab on you right there. Like, hey, man, gear inspections. Go over your gear for the day. Make sure you have everything prepped for tomorrow. Make sure everything's working, function test, right? Mentorship. Make sure you're mentoring as well as being mentored and understanding what being mentored means. These are all things that you learn from the military, especially in the infantry world. You understand this because, like, we'll leave it in.
Yeah. No way. We can. I'm sure we can go, like, dive deep into all those different things. But yeah, look at your day-to-day life and, like, what is it that you really need to be carrying around with you? And yeah, things like you said, like those inspections. Like, yeah, you want to make sure you have all the equipment that you need, all the tools you need, before you go and do whatever it is you're supposed to do and make sure that they work and all that kind of stuff. So I guess, you know, there's a lot of things that we could do. But I guess, like, the heart of this whole conversation, it's about connections. It's about people. And that, I think, is probably the most important thing that we were talking about today. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one other thing that we're touching on too, especially what we have here too, is like, and the importance of what you're talking about as far as leaving things in the truck. Right. So if I'm carrying that load with me at all times and I am just like tensed up at all times, is it going to affect me? Maybe. Is it going to affect her? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want it to affect my relationship? No.
Right.
Do I want her to see that side of me at all times? No. Does she know I'm capable of that side? Yeah.
Where?
Does she need to be the one to see that?
Right.
No. And from a spouse point, do you have anything around your...
I think just something that we've done great from the beginning. Sean's been so honest and transparent about his whole story from the beginning. No surprises. And it allowed me to really be, like I said in the beginning, just dive head first, because it felt so open and welcome. And like, I want you right here with me and through this entire journey. So it was everything that he has done from... all of his whole entire story, it allowed me to be that much closer to him, and it allowed me in so much more and to be a better partner, you know. So there's no secrets. So it really enables me to be as close as doing things like this, being so involved with the coffee company. He was saying, like, coffee is surrounded by community. If he's not there, I can share his story just as passionately, just as intentionally, you know, with as much vigor that he does. And it becomes a huge conversation, and It's all, like you said, all about connections.
And then if you stick in that mindset as the veteran where you wall off your spouse, what's that going to do?
Yeah. And the rest of your family too. You know, I know older veterans and even current generation veterans, but you know, just personally in my life, but people like my grandfather, he fought in World War II. I don't really know much about what he did in World War II. He was in the Navy. He was in the Pacific. That's about the extent of how much I know about it. You know, other people I know served in Vietnam. They don't talk about it. And it's like, if you don't talk about it, then that story never gets told. And then, you know, people end up having questions and like, what made Dad tick? You know, why was Dad the way he was? Like, why, you know, why did he, you know, why didn't he like to be in big crowds, or why didn't he like to, you know, be around fireworks, or, you know, whatever those things happen to be, whatever those triggers might be for somebody. But if you're open, you talk to people about it. And I talk to my kids. I mean, they're young still. I keep it age appropriate. You know, I don't go into as graphic details as I could maybe, but you know, I talk to them. And so it's not like a confusing thing. Like, why is Dad the way, why are you the way you are, Dad? You know, like why are you being weird? You
know, I actually have a question for Sean.
Yeah.
I think this is a good one. I think veterans should hear this if you can. Now, how important was it for you to share your story with your spouse?
It's huge, man, because if you live in the shadow and you don't share it, then she's going to see you as a shadow, right?
Yeah.
And that's not what I want to be. I want to be transparent. I want to be one as a whole, and I want to be humble there. Like, I don't want to be a shadow. I don't want to be somebody who's not present. I want to be present, and I want her to see what I'm going through and understand what I'm going through when and if I go through anything, for that matter. You know?
Yeah.
I do understand to an extent where there's times where it's easier not to tell a story only because I have to explain X, Y, Z to get to that. Not because I don't want that person to know. It's just, it's a hard paragraph to explain everything that you just don't understand. Like, I'm not going to go through 535s or something like that to my significant other to get to the final point of the story, you know? But yeah. I think that it's crucial to be an open book.
Yep.
I think it's crucial to tell your spouse everything in order to open up the next chapter of your life.
And I think to that point, that's just about respect for that other person in the relationship. Because if you're not looking at that person as a partner that you're going in through life with, then you're not really being respectful of that person, right? Like, they're looking at it going in like, hey, I'm here for you. You're here for me. We're in this together. And if we can't do this together, then really what's the point? And so, you know, you come together, you lay it all out there, and then she'll know if there's something going on with you. She'll know exactly what it is, and she'll be there to be able to help you instead of standing there scratching her head like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? You know,
here's the best, I think the best example for this conversation.
Sure.
If your partner knows every mole on your body and knows when that mole looks cancerous, why can't your partner know everything that's in your head?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, why not?
That's perfect.
Because your brain is cancerous at the end of the day, right? Like, and I would pardon him.
Absolutely.
No, and the reason why I wanted to ask you, and I appreciate Sean sharing that, is veterans struggle with loneliness.
Yeah.
But veterans are married. They have family. So they are lonely with tons of people around them because of not sharing their experience.
Right.
Right. I'm not saying that's the direct, but I know that I tell my wife everything because it actually makes me feel better. The good, the bad, the ugly. Right. And I'm sure you guys do the same. And I think men in general, they try to, you know, be tough and, you know, wear it on their chin all the time.
Right.
But that's not reality.
It's not, no. And it's not the way to do it. Yeah. You could be to what you're saying, Tom, like, some of these guys could be standing in a crowded room and feel all alone because they're not willing to talk to anybody. And so, like, that's just, not the right way to go about it, especially in a relationship like what we're talking about here. But
there's something I want to add to that too, as far as like just different chapters of your life too, right? So my friend JT over Consequence of Habit, I think Tom, I introduced you to him at one point.
Yep.
Phenomenal guy, had me on a podcast one time and hit me with a question that I didn't render right off the bat. And he goes, Sean, what does purpose mean to you? And I was like, I went this way, I went that way. I stutter step, I got tongue tied. I'm like, I don't know what to say right now. But I've got that answer and it's kind of riddled back into me. And I've kind of learned through time, like purpose is ever changing, right? And purpose is ever changing to each chapter of your life. And I think that this would also help combat depression, loneliness, as well as veteran suicide, is understanding that purpose is unique to each chapter. Now, you might not find that purpose in the beginning of the chapter. You might find that purpose at the end of the chapter, of the picture or book. But I guarantee you there's going to be a purpose in that chapter.
Yeah.
Your life is not all one big purpose. There's multiple purposes in it, and you don't know what that purpose is until it hits you. And then another chapter might come into play, right? If you hyper-focus on, like, my purpose in life is to be married and then we get divorced, that's a hard thing to overcome. That was your only purpose. My only purpose in life was to be a Marine, which is, that's what I thought, and then I got out. What is my next purpose?
Yeah.
And it took me a while to kind of figure that out. And honestly, it probably took me up until he asked me that question. Like, this is what I've been talking about since I started, is literally purpose is constantly changing.
Yeah, that's right. I like that, Sean.
Yeah, I do too. I guess, you know, with that, kind of as we're kind of wrapping up here towards the end, kind of as we're kind of wrapping up here, talking a little bit about that, where can people go to find out, you know, how to get the coffee, all about that? And then we'll talk a little bit about Warrior Strong 2 to wrap it up, and then we'll go from there.
Sounds good, Mick. So you find everything online at brucescoffee.com. That's brucescoffee.com. We do subscriptions, online orders. We do party favors for events, catering, you name it. You got an idea. You like coffee, hit us up. We'll show you something. What? We do a lot of kegerators for people's businesses for cold brew. So we get cold brew on tap in your business, your establishment, as well as restaurants and bars in that matter, too. A lot of different places here in Morris County that have or coffee on tap. We just opened up at Sir Rose over in Parsippany, where we got by the cup every weekend. Ash's Farms over in Flanders, a couple of places where we're rocking along.
Excellent, excellent. Well, exciting to see how you guys are growing and getting out there, doing lots of great stuff. And the connections, again, connections with folks like Tom and Warrior Strong and the other organizations that you guys are working with. It's about the people, and the coffee's there, and the coffee's good, and that's a wonderful thing. But at the end of the day, it's about the connections, it's about the people, and community. Obviously, and community, right? Obviously, just talking to you guys today, I could tell that that's a big part of everything that you guys do, you know, not just in personal relationships, but extended as well. And so, you know, it's really refreshing to hear people like you guys out there that actually are doing the work to help connect people to various organizations and spread the word about them. So definitely appreciate everything that you guys are doing through the coffee. Tom, appreciate you again. Tom, for the listeners who didn't catch it, I should have said this at the beginning of the episode, but Tom was on the show earlier, episode 469. That was back in March sometime when that episode came out. But definitely go check that out to learn more about Warrior Strong. And, you know, definitely we'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes as well for folks to get some coffee, check out Warrior Strong and all that. So thank you to the three of you. This is a rare occasion that I have three guests on the show. It's actually kind of cool because the three of you kind of just took over. I was kind of on autopilot for part of it. So this is kind of awesome.
Yeah,
I definitely appreciate everything that you guys are doing. And I really look forward to hearing more about what you guys are up to.
Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it. It's good meeting you too, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it was great episode. Sean's the man, dude. He's just a guy that just loves helping other people.
Yeah.
In simple
terms. Tom's hair looks stupid.
Yeah, Sean, keep that hat on.
I was just going to say, says the guy with the hat on.
He doesn't want to tell you, but I got my inspiration from him.
Okay. That's okay. My hairline's retreating like it's losing the battle.
it looks good, man. We totally lost the battle already. Yeah.
I'm the one holding the line. That's scary.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you.